Good morning. Would you please turn your Bibles to Luke, the 8th chapter? Luke 8. It's good to see all of you this morning. It tells us, beginning in verse 40, "And as Jesus returned, the people welcomed him, for they had all been waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, and he was an official of the synagogue, and he fell at Jesus' feet and began to implore him to come to his house. For he had an only daughter, about 12 years old, and she was dying. But as he went, the crowds were pressing against him." You can't help but imagine the circumstances of someone who, even though he was an official there in the synagogue, even though he was a man of some importance, yet he's brought to his knees because of the circumstances that he finds himself in, with his only child, a 12-year-old daughter, dying, and he goes to Jesus to find the solution to the problem. Jesus agrees to go along with him, and we see in this particular story another story that is put inside of that story, to where you have a woman who has a bloody hemorrhage, a severe female problem that puts her in a situation to where it would completely upset her domestic and religious life simply because of the rules of cleanness and uncleanness in the Old Testament. But the Lord heals her and heals her passively because, as you'll recall, she thinks that if she can just touch the hem of his garment that she'll be healed, and certainly she is. Jesus asks the apostles, "Who touched me?" And they get a little bit testy with him by saying, "Look at the crowds around you, and you ask who touched you?" But this woman comes forward, and she is embarrassed. And she explains everything that was her problem and everything that Jesus has done, and how that she can feel that the blood has stopped inside her body. And Jesus praises her and said, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." Picking up the story of Jairus' daughter in verse 49, it says, "Now while he was still speaking, someone came from the house of the synagogue official saying, 'Your daughter has died. Don't trouble the teacher anymore.'" I want you to imagine how this must have really let the family down considerably, because you could just see them second-guessing themselves. If we'd have just come a little bit earlier, if the crowds hadn't been so bad, if there hadn't been the interruption of this woman who was healed, and everything may have come to their minds, because here their life that had been wrapped up in the life of this child is now gone because she's dead. But it's interesting in the fact that their lives have been shattered. They look at Jesus, and it says when he heard this in verse 50, he answered them, "Do not be afraid any longer. Only believe, and she'll be made well." Now, how can this be? Here is a situation in which everyone is devastated, but they look in the steely eyes of Jesus, and he says, "Don't be afraid. Only believe, and she'll be made well." They follow Jesus in verse 51. It says he came to the house, and he did not allow anyone to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the girl's father and mother. Now, when they were all weeping and lamenting for her, but he said, "Stop weeping, for she has not died, but is asleep." And they began laughing at him, knowing that she had died. He, however, took her by the hand and called, saying, "Child, arise." In fact, it's interesting. It's one of those few occasions in Mark's account where we see the exact words of Jesus given, "Talitha kum." And here she is told to arise. And her spirit returned, and she got up immediately, and he gave orders for something to be given her to eat. And her parents were amazed, but he instructed them to tell no one what had happened. Here you have a situation in which a girl has passed from this life through death into the next, and yet Jesus is able to call her back, perhaps moments after her death, but he does so confidently, telling them not to be afraid, only believe. And with the father and the mother and Peter, James, and John in the room, he looks at the little girl and tells her, "Child, arise." And I want you to imagine pale flesh beginning to have color restored to it again. Imagine her eyelids beginning to flutter. Imagine her eyes opening. Imagine the parents being just amazed that this could occur. It says they were in verse 56. But then Jesus tells them, "Don't tell anyone what has happened." Here Jesus is able to take someone not only who has come to the point of death, but who's crossed over into death, and bring them back, showing he has power over death. And yet we see the only ones who are truly convinced of this situation because of the information they have from being in the room are Peter, James, and John, and Jairus, his wife, and of course, the daughter. In a chapter earlier in Luke's account, it tells us about another resurrection that occurs during the time of Jesus. It tells us about a man who had died at Nain. And at Nain, we see him coming through town and under these circumstances being someone who's dead. He interrupts a funeral. But Jesus stops the funeral. And at the funeral, he tells them to stop and tells them not to weep. I want you to imagine just how disconcerting that must have been in many ways for a man to have the gall to tell people at a funeral not to weep, and the very gall to tell people in a situation to where they've lost a loved one. In fact, as we're told, it's the only son of this widow woman. And in ancient times, if someone had no male to take care of them, she was especially destitute. Without a social safety net, people needed a husband or a son who would love them enough to take care of them and make sure that all of their needs were met. But as Jesus is there, we see him in the situation in which he finally tells them, he says to the man, "Arise." And all of a sudden you can imagine as he's touched the coffin, there's activity within the coffin. And he rises from the dead. And there we see Jesus again, not only showing his power over death, over someone who's been dead a matter of minutes, but this time, a situation in which a man has died earlier that day, has been laid out, has been prepared for burial, has been put in a coffin, is in the funeral procession, and now is able to be raised from the dead through the power of Jesus Christ. In the 11th chapter of the book of John, it tells us there the story of the raising of Lazarus. Lazarus and his sisters, Mary and Martha, were good friends of Jesus. Jesus hears that Lazarus is sick, and he delays coming, knowing full well what he intended to do. He finally waits until Lazarus has died, and then goes across the Jordan River to Bethany, which is only about 2 miles from Jerusalem, where Mary and Martha now live and where Lazarus used to live. Lazarus, unlike Jairus' daughter, who may have been dead for moments, and unlike the widow's son at Nain, who had been dead for perhaps hours, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. And we see Jesus coming into town and Martha coming out to meet him. She says in verse 21 of chapter 11, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." I think it's not a statement of accusation. I think it's a statement of faith. In which she says, "Lord, I realize you could have even saved the life of my brother." And Jesus says in verse 23, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he'll rise again in the resurrection of the last day." But she'd early mentioned in verse 22 how she knew that whatever you ask of God, God would give him. So here she has faith in Jesus that he could have healed him, and faith that Jesus could raise him even now. But realizes it's almost too much to ask. In verse 25, though, Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die." Do you believe that? And she said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, even he who comes into the world." As news began to get through the village that Jesus was in town, Martha quickly leaves the house where she was mourning with friends and runs out to see Jesus. And just like Martha earlier had said, she says in verse 32, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled. And said, "Where have you laid him?" And they said to him, "Lord, come and see." And here in the shortest verse in the English Bible, we see it saying, "Jesus wept." Even knowing what he's going to do, Jesus sees how terrible death is in the eyes of Mary and Martha, and the separation that it causes, and how hurt they are by it. He's moved by their weeping. And he weeps too. So the Jews were saying, "See how much he loved him?" But some of the others said, "Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man also from dying?" There are some who are challenging Jesus. Because here, how all of the things that he's been able to do, couldn't he have kept this man from dying and gotten to a place where, in their minds, Lazarus was irredeemable as far as life was concerned? So Jesus again, being deeply moved within, came to the tomb. Now it was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Remove the stone." But Martha, the sister of the deceased, said to him, "Lord, by this time there'll be a stench, for he's been dead 4 days. You can just see Jesus saying, "Remove the stone." And yet Martha, the cool-headed one among them, says, "Lord, let's don't do that. He'd have already begun to decay after 4 days in an unembalmed situation." But Jesus said, "Did I not say to you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they removed the stone. Then Jesus raised his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. And I knew that you always hear me, but because of the people standing around, I said it so that they may believe that you sent me." And when he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth!" And the man who had died came forth, bound hand and foot with wrappings, and his face was wrapped about with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, "Unbind him. Let him go." Here in these three occasions, we see Jesus showing His power over death. Death over something that someone might have been able to explain by just saying, well, the little girl really didn't die. We just thought she was dead. She was close. But she'd only been declared dead for a short time. And Jesus raises her. Here you have a man whose funeral is interrupted, Nain, who's been dead probably hours, and yet Jesus raises him from the dead, showing that He has power over death, power over the resurrection, and calls him forth, and he comes alive, and he gives him back to his widowed mother. But here with Lazarus, who's been dead 4 days, whose body would already have begun to deteriorate, He tells them to remove the stone, and even after their discouragement, it's removed, and He calls him to come forth after praying to God, and the man comes forth alive. You see, death has no power over Jesus. Jesus is the Lord of the resurrection. Jesus is the one who all of the problems that we face and that great obscenity that Satan has plagued us with by cutting us off from the Lord and cutting us off from the tree of life, we are in a situation in which all of us, if we live long enough, will die. The only thing that would keep that from happening is if the Lord comes back first. But here we see Jesus having power even over life and death in human beings. The greatest example of that, though, is found in the 28th chapter of the book of Matthew, where after Jesus' own crucifixion, in which He's tortured, nailed to a cross. And after hours on that cross, He finally says, "It is finished. Father, into Your hands I commit My spirit." And He passes away, dashing the hopes of the apostles, who apparently had ignored the fact that He said, "Tear down this temple and I'll build it in 3 days." The Jews remembered. You remember, they remember so much that He said He was going to be raised, they want a guard placed at His tomb so that no one can come along and steal His body and say that He was raised from the dead. But He's taken, hastily put in a tomb. The Sabbath comes and goes. And it tells us in chapter 28, verse 1, that after the Sabbath, as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to look at the grave. Now, you and I wouldn't normally go to a grave except to mourn, but a grave in that day and time was something that was generally a tomb. It would be carved out of the limestone that was relatively easy to work in that day and time and place. And you'd build a place with sometimes even rooms in it. It might be tall enough to stand in. It might not be, only tall enough to be able to stoop down and go into it. But usually it would have a vestibule inside of it, and then there would be, just like if we were looking at a tomb from the top, imagine this being the opening, imagine this being the vestibule, and imagine there being cubicles for dead people to be placed. And the stone would be rolled away a day after someone had passed away, and you might take spices or perfume or other things so that the stench might not be smelled on the outside of the tomb. So people would go through there. In fact, after a few years, when the body had completely deteriorated or desiccated, they'd go in there and pick whatever flesh was left off the bones and put the bones in what was called an ossuary, or a bone box that was as long as a person's femur. And they would then put those in one of those cubicles so that a family for generations might be able to use a tomb. I expect that's what Joseph of Arimathea had in mind. But it tells us that as these women go to the grave, that behold, a severe earthquake had occurred. For an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled away the stone and sat on it. And his appearance was like lightning and his clothing as white as snow. And the guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men. And the angel said to the women, "Don't be afraid, for I know that you're looking for Jesus who's been crucified. He's not here. He has been risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he was lying. Go quickly and tell his disciples that he's risen from the dead, and behold, he's going ahead of you into Galilee, and there you will see him. Behold, I have told you." Of all the resurrections that occurred during the time of Jesus, he raised people who would one day die again. But one of the most amazing things about his own resurrection, the greatest of these manifestations over death that we've seen, is the fact that Jesus is raised to die no more. The women come to the tomb and they say, "He's not here. He's risen. Come and see the place where the Lord lay." They go to the apostles, and the apostles don't believe them. Until eventually Jesus appears to them himself. You see, Jesus not only had power over death while he was on earth to raise human beings who would die again, but the power to overcome death himself. And we see there the angel rolled away the stone and he was raised from the dead to die no more. In the second chapter of the book of Acts, in the very first gospel sermon that's being preached, there as we see Peter's account being given to us, he tells us exactly what these people had done in killing the Messiah. But yet, he also tries to let them understand exactly what has occurred. He said, "This man," in verse 23 of chapter 2, "delivered over by the predetermined plan and foreknowledge of God, you nailed to a cross by the hands of godless men and put him to death. But God raised him up again, putting an end to the agony of death, since it was impossible for him to be held in its power." You see, Jesus is Lord of the resurrection too. Jesus is the one who death served as no obstacle for while he was alive in the lives of others. It was something that it was impossible to hold him when he was killed himself so that he was raised on the third day. And it's something that served as an impossibility to ever be an effect on his life again, because his perfect life made him the perfect sacrifice so that he might also be the one who could be the author of our resurrection. In the fifth chapter of the book of John, there we see early in Jesus' ministry, we see it being mentioned about the importance of the resurrection. Not only for those mentioned in the Gospels, and not only for Jesus himself, but a resurrection that will involve everyone seated here. In verse 25, beginning in John 5, he said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming, and now is, when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For just as the Father has life in himself, so he gave to the Son also to have life in himself. And he gave him authority to execute judgment, because he's the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming in which all who are in the tombs will hear his voice and will come forth. Those who did the good deeds to a resurrection of life, and those who committed the evil deeds to a resurrection of judgment." See, death served as no problem for Jesus while he was alive, because he could raise somebody no matter how long they'd been dead. It served as no problem because death was impossible to hold him. Even though they could kill him on a cross, death couldn't keep him. And God raised him up. But what's important for us to consider is the fact that this Lord of the resurrection is someone who one day will raise us up. But that's where we have a choice. A choice of whether we'll be raised, as it says in verse 29 of John 5, to a resurrection of life, or to a resurrection of judgment. I want you to understand, Jesus has the power over death, and none of us do. But you know, he's given us the power by the choice we can make in our lives of whether we want to be raised to life or raised to judgment or condemnation, as it's sometimes translated. What will you choose this morning? We know that it is appointed unto man once to die, and after that comes judgment. But what are you going to decide? You don't have power over life and death, but Jesus does. And Jesus, because of his power over death, has made it so that we can be raised to life, never to die again, to be able to be in the presence of the Lord forever and ever. But it takes obedience to the gospel of Christ, and it takes adherence to the Word of God, as is pointed out in verse 29, to be able to be one of those people who enjoy the benefits of the resurrection Jesus provides. Why don't you come in faith this morning, believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, repenting of the things that you've done that are wrong, confessing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God to this group and to everyone for the rest of your life, and then be baptized so your sins can be washed away and you can be added to the Lord's church and you can become his child? Why would you choose to be raised simply for a judgment that will condemn you forever to a devil's hell? Death is certain. Judgment, as is described here, is something that is certain. Resurrection for judgment is something that's going to occur. Your part is, are you going to be one of those who, because you have obeyed the gospel and lived faithfully to the Lord, will be one of those who are raised to life? Or will you be raised to condemnation? You, as a child of God, haven't lived as you should. You need to think seriously about this, because every day we live closer to physical death and live closer to the time in which we'll be judged by the Lord. It behooves us to think, and think seriously, about the importance of the decisions that we make in this life, which will echo in eternity. Will you be one of those who are raised to life or raised to condemnation? The choice rests with you. Make things right with God this morning while there's time and opportunity. Please do so while we stand and sing the song Selected.